and welcome to the Trust Your Body Project. Trust Your Body Project is a podcast and social media movement designed to help you heal, eat, and create space for the things that truly matter. I'm your host, Whitney Catalano. I'm an anti-diet, health at every size registered dietitian, helping you stop dieting, make peace with your body, and take the power back from your inner bully. Welcome to episode number 23. On today's episode, I am talking to a fellow dietitian and friend, Anna Sweeney, who is talking about her disability kind of in a way that I don't know if she's ever talked about on another podcast before. And we introduced the conversation a little bit, but the reason why I'm posting this now, we did the conversation maybe a month or two ago, and the reason why I'm posting it now is because it is the end of Disability Awareness Month. So if you go to @dietitianAnna on Instagram, you can learn more from her directly. But today we are just going to be talking, or you're going to hear our conversation, and it was a really important conversation. So a quick backstory, I think I talked about it in the interview, but I'll just preface it again. I actually had this conversation with her, or a similar conversation with her, the first time I interviewed her. The interview was pretty bland. We kind of covered your basic like eating disorder information, plus like a little bit about her disability. But she reached out to me and was basically like, hey, can we redo this? I really, you know, appreciate that you're able to go deep with things. And I don't get a chance to really talk about my disability on most podcasts because it's usually a little bit about her, a little bit about, you know, eating disorder stuff. So she really wanted a chance to dive in. So we went there, and I think you're really going to like it. I know it was a very enlightening interview for me. I learned a lot. I always learn a lot when I talk to her. She's just so well-educated in her specialty, which is eating disorders. And she's so willing to be transparent about her disability and speak from a place of personal experience, but also calling attention, you know, where she holds a lot of privilege and some of the things that she experiences, some of the things that she hears from other people. So I just think this is going to be a really interesting conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. But before we get into that, I hope you are enjoying this podcast so far. I would absolutely love feedback on what you all want to know more about. From what I've gathered, the exercise episode I did a couple of episodes ago was one of your favorites. I got so much amazing feedback on that episode saying it was super helpful. So I'm happy to do more sort of 5-tip episodes in between my interviews because I really like breaking up the interviews a little bit with shorter, more digestible, and really actionable episodes. But I kind of need to just know from you all what you're struggling with, what you need help with. And I am happy to show up and do that. So you can go ahead and email me podcast@WhitneyCatalano.com. Just a quick update. Like I had mentioned in previous episodes, Club TYB is opening again in a couple weeks. So that's really exciting. And then I will be launching a food freedom course. Again, not totally sure on the name yet, working on it. But basically it's a course designed to take you from emotional and binge eating to food freedom and really give you the tools to be able to navigate this journey. And there's going to be, you know, different levels with which you can participate in the course, with which I feel like that was not correct grammar. But anyway, moving on. So this is going to be an option for people who are maybe have a little bit tighter budgets or really just are looking for a more guided way to go about this, but ultimately kind of want to do things at your own pace. I will be leading the course, so we'll all be going through it together, but it does give you a little bit of freedom to kind of go through things on your own, at your own pace and independently, if you will, but with my support, of course. So if that is something that you are interested in, definitely head to my website and you can sign up for my newsletter. That's like honestly the best way to find out, or turn on my post notifications on Instagram. I always am on Instagram. I wish I liked other platforms as much as I love Instagram, but I just don't. That's the reality of the situation. So you know what? That's okay. Also, for those of you who are wondering, I have a few free resources on my website. So I have a webinar on my website that I'm actually going to be redoing pretty soon. But if you want to go check that out now, just because like I had mentioned before, and I'll explain that in a second, I'm redoing my call structure. So the webinar is free. It is basically teaches you the basics of why diets don't work, why you might be emotional eating, why emotional eating is not a bad thing, and how to start dealing with the shame around emotional eating and binge eating. So that webinar is really good. I highly recommend it. I spent a lot of time and energy on it, and I'm very proud of it. So I'm actually kind of sad that I have to change it a little bit, but I won't be changing it too much. I'll just be kind of like sprucing it up, you know, ironing out the kinks, if you will. I have a free binge meditation, whitneycatalano.com/binge to download that. And then I have all of these podcast episodes actually not quite transcribed, but summarized in blog posts on my website. So whitneycatalano.com. All of this is linked in the show notes. My amazing podcast assistant, Britt, does those for me. So go check them out and show her some love. And last but not least, if you are tired of emotional eating, tired of binge eating, you feel like nothing's ever going to change, and you know, you've listened to these podcast episodes and you've seen me on Instagram or whatever, you really like the way that I go about presenting this information, and you're feeling like you just can't do this alone and you really need someone to support you and guide you through this process and hold your hand as you, you know, navigate the whole thing of questioning the internalized fat phobia and healing your relationship with food and actually facing those fear foods. And not only that, but just learning how to be bolder in your life and stop people pleasing so much and really, you know, take responsibility for your happiness, then I am here to help. And you can book a call with me. As I had mentioned previously, I will now only be taking applications for these calls because unfortunately I just do not have enough hours in the day to take all of your amazing calls. So if you want to apply, you can go to whitneycatalano.com/book and basically you tell me a little bit about yourself. And then, you know, I think most of the calls I end up scheduling, but it's just kind of to make sure that we can actually settle on a time because like I had mentioned before, I had had people who basically didn't show up to calls, which is very frustrating. Just as like a PSA, if you ever have a call or an appointment booked, you know, we're not always perfect. I'm not going to say that I've always shown up to appointments or I've always shown up to calls that I had booked, but I like will never not do that again. And if you don't show up to a call, just shoot a quick email and say, hey, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm sorry I didn't show up or whatever it is. It means a lot to the person on the other end. And, you know, I dedicate a lot of my time every week to do these free calls. So I just would love to hear from you all if you can't make it. And the application process, what I love is that it will enable me to kind of connect with you ahead of time and figure out a time to book the call that really both works for both of us. So that you're not just on an online scheduler booking anything in the middle of the night or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Like it kind of enables us to both be committed to this process and we both come to this call ready. And the calls are really fun. I personally really like them because they give me a chance to support you all. Even if it doesn't turn into coaching, I just really like being in support and finding out what you're struggling with and then going deep because yeah, it's just, I mean, that's the whole reason I do what I do, right? So that's what's going on with that. whitneycatalano.com/book if you are interested in that. And I will probably be rewriting a whole little thing about my coaching. So lots of big changes coming up. I'm really, really excited. But in the meantime, I'm kind of just resting, enjoying summer. I hope you all are enjoying your summer as well. I have been very tired recently. I think just because, I mean, a lot's going on. I moved about a month ago, which actually seems kind of wild that it was only a month ago that I moved into my new place. Yeah, that makes sense that I'm tired. Oh my gosh. I moved and right as I moved, I launched Club TYB and then I had to kind of recover from the launch and then I've been buying furniture and I've been, you know, taking on more clients and yeah, it makes sense that I'm a little bit tired. I also really need a vacation. So that's definitely going to be happening soon. And I will let you all know if I take a few weeks off the podcast. But right now, my number one goal is getting out this backlog of interviews and giving Anna her space to talk on this interview. So I hope you all enjoy this episode and my little ramble at the beginning of every episode. And let me know on Instagram, shoot me a little DM if you are listening to this. Post screenshots of this to Instagram stories or even to Instagram if you want, your main feed, but also understand if you don't want to do that because the main feed is precious. But go ahead and post screenshots of the episode that you're listening to onto Instagram stories and tag me at Trust Your Body Project so that I know that you're listening, and let me know what you want to hear. Engage with me. I've been trying better to respond to more DMs, especially when you all have tips for things that you want to hear from me. I love that. I keep a little list of things so that I can be helping y'all out and giving you that content that you want. So that's what's going on with me. Okay, I'm gonna stop talking now. I hope you enjoyed this interview. Bye-bye. Today we are talking to Anna Sweeney, who you may know on Instagram as Dietitian Anna. Anna Sweeney is a registered dietitian, a certified eating disorder dietitian, and the owner of Whole Life Nutrition, a nutrition therapy practice dedicated to the treatment of eating disorders. The rest of her bio will be in the show notes. Just as a little background, so Anna and I did this whole interview. It was fine. Yeah, it was like any other conversation between two dietitians, like woohoo. And Anna, you have a disability.
I do.
So we got a little bit into it, but then you reached out to me after. Like, I felt kind of weird because the interview was like fine. And then you reached out to me and you were like, let's go deeper. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your disability first and foremost. Let's get your story.
You got it. So I was diagnosed with MS when I was 15 years old. And in retrospect, I was 12 when it started. But I have had relapsing remitting MS, or I was diagnosed with relapsing remitting MS when I was in high school. And I'm in my early 30s now, and in the last 4 years or so, I have moved from relapsing remitting MS to secondary progressive MS. And in that time, I have acquired disability in a pretty progressive way. And it really has been very humbling, because I can only speak from my experience of being disabled, but it is certainly not a thing that happened overnight. And so there are days that I wake up and there are things that I can't do. And then I wake up the next day and I can do them again. But it is, to be honest, Whitney, it's a bit of a mind fuck, but it's also quite a gift in a lot of ways, because I've slowed down because my body is literally telling me to slow down. And so I'm trying to interpret that as kind of a message from the world that I need to just chill out. And I'm not doing a great job of that, but I'm trying.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Yeah. One of the things I really appreciate about your platform, since you did that whole photo shoot and kind of told your story, was you seem to be on days that you're having a little bit of harder time, or I think you had a day where you fell recently and you come to Instagram stories and you're kind of like, this is what's going on. And I think that visibility is really helpful. Tell me a little bit about your experiences, like before, because from what I know, you hadn't like told Instagram about your disability or your MS diagnosis until what, like a year or so ago?
So I didn't really start talking about my disability out loud until after. It was 2017, I think, was when the IADEP conference, when I was in a scooter and experienced, I had people who knew to look for me in a scooter. Like, they didn't look at me. I experienced being invisible for the first time in my life. And I was really mad and heartbroken and devastated, and spent a good deal of that conference like sitting in the back row, because I didn't want to interrupt anybody with my bay-ass scooter that had like the most inane, you know, the reverse sound that a truck makes when it backs up. Mm-hmm. My rented scooter made that sound, and I'm in like small conference rooms. Yeah, that it was just like this horrible, horrible, embarrassing experience. It was really, really wild, and it has changed the way that I think about disability, but it really was the impetus that got me talking about this. So right after that, I went on Food Psych and I actually asked Christy, like, can I just like talk about this? Cause I was trying to actually put together a body image like survey for other dietitians. And I was curious, cause I was having a unique body image experience. And the fact is, like, we practitioners, I think, also deserve space to be human. And so after IADEP, I kind of got a little bit fervent about this, and I had a photo shoot, which was really incredible. One of my friends took these pictures. It was a really, really beautiful day. So now the only photographs that I share with anyone, if I'm doing anything public relations related, I make sure that everything I use is showing one or the other of my mobility aids. Mm-hmm. Because it feels really important to me that that is what is being portrayed, because when I'm aware of the fact that I live within privilege and I have all of the privileges, right? I have all of the privileges, and I also happen to live in a disabled body. And I think it is my honor and responsibility to actually talk about things that I've not heard spoken of before. And perhaps it's because I wasn't looking for them, but for sure, the things that I have learned being a disabled person, I never would have learned had I not lived them. And so it feels important to me that I'm here and kind of sharing my shit, but like to speak to what you were talking about, like there was a good week there. I took a fall like a little bit more than a month ago, maybe or so. I had like a scar on my forehead and like, it was like a purple Dermabond. It was very attractive. And I showed up, right? Like that, I wasn't putting filters on my face to make it look like that wasn't a real thing. I appreciate that I sometimes share like really quite vulnerable things. And I never do this. I never share anything with the intention of putting this on other people, not looking for people to hold me. I am looking to connect to that one person who has a similar experience, or maybe it's a completely dissimilar experience, but the way that I wrote about something clicked for them. Like I am really loving the connection and the community that I have established on social media. It blows me away every single day that people are actually like signing up to hang out with me. Like what is, I don't get it, but I feel really, really deeply honored.
So I was going to ask you about that a little bit in terms of this feeling, because I'm sure a lot of people struggle with this feeling of like, wanting to be vulnerable, wanting to be honest and say, you know, here's all the things, but not wanting to put it on anyone else. Sometimes we don't want sympathy, you know, it's like, that doesn't feel very good. Yeah. And so how do you navigate that?
So I do my best. Like I am honest in the things that I write, but nothing that I write is seeking sympathy. I am a strong woman, like in my disability, as I lose physical strength, I am so much more powerful as a human. And so I'm not looking for feedback. I'm looking to share human experience. And I am also sharing that like in this moment of what sometimes does feel like extraordinary weakness and feels like an exceptional bummer. I won't tell you that if I could snap my fingers and have like a functional body, I wouldn't do it because I think I'd be lying. And like that, it's kind of a heartbreaking thing to say because I'm really grateful for all that disability has given me, but it's also like pretty shitty to be quite honest. We don't live in a world that makes it particularly easy for me to navigate. But that being said, I feel, and I perhaps I'm incorrect, but I feel like I found a nice balance where I'm not looking for people to save me. I'm truly trying to be as forthright and honest and genuine in the things that I share. And I hope that I do it in a way that doesn't leave people feeling like they're responsible for taking care of me. The least interesting comment that I can ever receive is like, you're super inspiring. I'm not actually inspiring. Like I'm just living. I'm alive. And I happen to be a disabled person who is choosing and also is supported in remaining in my life. At this point, I need people to make it possible for me to have a functional existence. And I have people that I can ask for help. And that by itself is a privilege and a gift and has made it possible for me to stay engaged in my life in the ways that I've wanted to. I'm just lucky. And I think I answered your question, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, from my perspective, you definitely aren't like putting it on anyone or being like, you know, pity me or whatever. But you know how people do respond to certain things and they're just like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I feel so bad. You know, and it's like, that's not what you're going for. And yet it still happens. Does that ever frustrate you?
So to be honest, it really doesn't happen that often. It's very rare that I have people saying like, I'm so sorry. Like I put my picture of my walker up the other day, my rainy walker. And some people said something about like, I hope you feel better soon, which I was like, that's so sweet. I hope I feel better soon too. But I'm really clear about like what's happening. And so while I believe that everyone that I interact with has a lot of empathy and probably feels really strongly that they wish that, like, you know, they want me to be well in all of the ways that strangers can wish someone else to be well. I really don't receive a lot of messages to that effect anymore. Earlier in my disability, I certainly did. It's also probably because when I was newly disabled, I was a total jackass about it, to be quite honest with you. Like I was not a good person. So my right leg is my primarily affected leg. I mean, both of my, like everything is affected now, but like my right leg is the leg that is primarily affected. And when I first started to become disabled, I was so vocal. I would talk so nastily about my body, like my stupid leg, and saying like these things, like projecting my anxiety onto other people. So if I say it first, nobody else is going to say it or feel it or think it. And like, I completely, completely understand that like that self-protective nature that I was like, that was the place that I was in. There was nothing else that I could do. But when I was doing all of that kind of lamenting my situation and being really vocal about my challenges, I got a lot of like, oh, I'm so, like, it was a lot of apologies and it was a lot of reception of, I'm really, really sorry. Don't get me wrong. Like this is not awesome. And I don't want anybody to be sorry about this because being sorry about this means being sorry about me. And this is me.
Yeah.
But earlier in my life, I have had my fair share of pity parties.
Yeah. You know, I can't help but draw the parallels between being, you know, struggling with your body image so much, being heavily in like an eating disorder or dieting or just like, I hate my body, like that really fueled, like when you were just saying that to me, I had this deep pang of familiarity of that sort of ego-driven, like, why, you know, that kind of, that comes up from self-protection. Like if I hate myself first, then I can beat everyone to it. And maybe I can yell it away and maybe I can make it, I don't know. And I think a lot of people will be able to relate to that on some level, which I find really interesting. What do you think helped the most? Can you even summarize? I don't know. What was your journey like, I guess, from that point to where you are now, casually enough, in 5 minutes or less? No, just kidding.
So to be really honest, there were several steps. The first step started with my shit talk jar. And I literally had this is very costly, but effective mechanism of intervening in body shit talk. I had a jar in my car and literally, and this, again, this speaks to privilege and you can do this. And this is a message to anybody who's listening to this. You can make your own shit talk jar and it doesn't actually matter if you're using whatever denomination you're using, but I put a dollar in the jar every time I talked out loud negatively about my body. And then I put a dollar in the jar every time I had a negative thought about my body. And ultimately, I ended up donating quite a lot of money to a local eating disorder organization. And to be frank, like, I don't talk shit about my body anymore. And it's really remarkable. And I don't, it probably had nothing to do with the money. Like, it was more about the action of say, of identifying, you know, this is a problematic behavior. And it felt important to me to be able to take that problematic behavior and put it somewhere else where it mattered. So it, like, this can be pennies and you can save your pennies for whatever at the end of your adventure. But really, I learned very directly. I've obviously heard this from other people, but like, nothing positive comes from speaking negatively about our bodies. Nothing. And my talking shit about my body was not going to make me less disabled. It was only reaffirming my feeling less comfortable in my body. And it was making it public and loud and really uncomfortable. And so I became disabled working in a residential facility. And so I think about the number of people that I have talked to and worked with, like even while I was working there, the number of humans that heard me processing like my grief around my own body. But to speaking to your point, the number of people who have said to me, like, I feel invisible in this body, and or I feel really uncomfortable in this body. So before I walk into the room, like, I'm the first one to make the joke about myself. I'm first one to like do these self-protective things that are really harmful to my soul and my spirit. But I'm going to do this to protect myself so that nobody else is the first person to say it. Crazy that I had to have this like first person experience to really understand just how damaging that is. That truly is not helpful for anybody. So started with the shit talk jar, and I have a memory of my father. So the last time I had a flare, an MS flare, was probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago or something like that. And my dad, for whatever reason, came to the hospital, and I was getting steroid injection, and we were walking out of the hospital. This is before I was using mobility devices at all, and I was just bitching and moaning about my situation. And my dad looks at me and he's like, Annie, you know, you could have a little grace. And immediately I was like, what are you talking about? You have no idea what I'm talking about. And when I hear the word grace, I hear religion, and I'm like, nope, thanks, I'm good. And with a little bit of time, like a couple of days, I was like, oh, my dad was talking about acceptance. Acceptance, right? It is like, just like I'm sitting on this chair because of gravity, I am disabled because I am disabled because I am disabled, and I can accept it or I can fight against it, and the fact will remain. So mm-hmm. It is far nicer to be on this planet and not be a jerk.
Yeah. I think that's a lesson for anyone struggling with their body. So one of the reasons why we decided to do this interview again, obviously, it was because, and one of the things you said to me was you admire, respect the fact that I'm willing to like go there, like go a little bit deeper, and you want to. So what my immediate question was, what do you think is missing from this conversation about disability that you are craving to talk about?
So I want to say before anything else, because I am not a disability expert, I am not a disability advocate outside of the fact that I am a disabled person, I really want to note that I am a person who lives with all of the privilege, and here I am. So I am a thin, white, cisgendered person and meet up to conventional standards of beauty, and I have this platform. And I hope that I am doing a service for the disabled community by being part of a mouthpiece. And I obviously, I think it's a much larger mouthpiece, but I'm really, frustrated by the fact that it is impossible for me to navigate this planet. Like, that is in every single way. It is torturous. It is this insult on top of insult on top of insult. I'm bummed out. I don't see disabled people on TV. I watch people running up and down stairs on the television. It was warm outside the other day because sometimes it's nice in Boston. And I was watching like these kids run up and down the steps of an ice cream shop and thinking like, oh, I would love to be able to do that. Oh my God, that would be amazing. And that will just not be a part of my life. I think the part of this conversation that is missing is, so, and this is another kind of story, so excuse me as I go on, but as I have shared my story of being disabled, Whitney, I've had a lot of people reach out to me on social media and talk about how their disability has prevented them from getting care for their eating disorders, for being appropriately and thoughtfully and holistically cared for. I am so compassionate about that, because I can't even imagine the number of humans that we aren't reaching because treatment facilities are not accessible. And to be honest with you, my office right now is not accessible. I'm in the process of looking to get like a ramp installed here, but that's insane. This is insane. Like, we live in this world that is made, and it should be made for able-bodied humans, but like, I live here too. And I should be allowed to live on this planet and be comfortable and enjoy myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I lived in Boston for 4 years, and thinking back, and that's part of my privilege, right? That I have to actively think about, oh, what places are and what places aren't accessible. But when you've got a place like Boston, for example, with the oldest buildings, these brownstones with the porches and the steps and the, like, there's so much
beautiful
walking, beautiful, really inaccessible.
Exceptionally so.
Yeah.
Exceptionally so. I went to a conference a couple months ago, and we stayed in a quote unquote accessible room, and the step to get into the shower was like 6 inches high. Like, there's nothing about that that is an accessible anything. It was like, really? Really? That's very interesting.
I see that all the time. The like bathtub showers in hotels that have the bar and have the little seat or whatever. Yeah. But it's like, you've got a full foot to get over the bathtub portion of it. Like, I've never understood that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very, very humbling and super wild. And it is also wild to think about what people identify as like handicap accessible. So I recently purchased a new car, and I was using my wheelchair to kind of get around the dealership. And I went to the restroom that had the wheelchair symbol on it. But the door is it's a weighted door. So I'm like kicking the door and pushing myself into the bathroom. I appreciate that you have a handicap accessible stall, but if I actually need another human to get me into a bathroom, and this is the same way at every single restaurant that I've ever been to, if I needed a human to get me into a bathroom, I'm not actually sure how accessible that is. Like, it's a cute idea. I like your little emblem, but like, that's not accessible.
I like your little required emblem.
It's adorable. It's adorable.
Yeah. Check that off your list.
Aces.
Yes.
Yeah. Aces. I appreciate your big bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be a really big challenge. And I also wonder too, what sort of things are at odds with accessibility, like building codes and stuff. I wonder, for natural disasters and things that people have to do to build into the infrastructure for that, what are at odds with the accessibility of the building? And are those conversations being had? Who's involved in those conversations? Is it all able-bodied people that are involved in these conversations? Like, you know?
Well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, of course. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, these are bigger projects than what we're going to be able to take on. Mm-hmm. But this is why it's so important to me that we talk about it.
Totally. So let's also talk about, too, the visibility or lack thereof of people with disabilities in like the professional, in like the RD community, for example, because that's something you kind of mentioned at the beginning.
Yep.
Of, we need to support practitioners with disabilities.
I think we just need to support practitioners. I'm an awesome dietitian. I happen to be a disabled one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's true. I mean, I'm actually speaking at FENCI this year on a panel with other disabled dietitians. And to my knowledge, I've never met another disabled dietitian. I'm certain that they exist on the planet. And I'm excited to be speaking with these other three people. And again, if that's a sum total of three or four of us, like, I don't know how representative that is. And who knows? Like, I don't know. There's a reason why I went through school as quickly as I did. I did it when I graduated college, I graduated very, very quickly with the intention. And I was saying, it was all lip service at the time, like, I want to do this work before I can't do this work. And I had no idea when I was 20 years old that I would ever actually be a disabled person. I'm super grateful for the way that I was able to do all of the things that I did from an education perspective, but I don't know. We're going to find out, because I'm going to meet 4 RDs at Fency, but everybody who I know who's ever gone to Fency has told me it is like really unfriendly to, and this is not about slamming Fency. I apologize to anyone. Everybody has said like, you would not have a good time. Have you been to Fency?
Mm-hmm. I was one of the people tweeting at you last year being like, right. Nope, don't.
Yeah, no. Right, exactly.
Right. Like, mm-mm.
Don't come.
I mean, one of the things that I was just thinking about too is the inherent privilege, I guess you would call it, of you being visible online. You have a ton of friends. Like, a lot of us are going to rally around you. And then imagining being like a brand new dietitian, trying to, not knowing anyone. Like, I felt weird my first Fency. I wasn't even a dietitian yet. And I felt so weird and like awkward and nervous, you know? And I can't even imagine also having to think about like accessibility and getting around and exactly what you were talking about at the IADEP conference of just feeling invisible. Like, that is, yep, sounds so painful.
Yeah. Again, this is kind of one of the reasons why I do this. And I have had RDs reach out to me and let me know that it's been really hard for them to get jobs secondary to being disabled. And I mean, that's a heartbreaking thing. And I have a ton of privilege to have the private practice that I do and to be able to have transitioned out of a role where I was working in facilities and now here I am. And like, I don't know you, but I feel like I know you because of social media. And yeah. So like, you're going to push my ass around. Mm-hmm. If I ask you to push my ass around, I'm like, I am at a place right now in my life where I don't have an ego about that. It's so funny because I am such an independent person. And in a previous life, I would never have asked for help in the way that I do, but I really, really recognize how important it is for us as humans to actually show up for one another and how small things, like, for example, like plugging in a lamp in my office might be a thing that takes me like 5 minutes, something very simple, or moving my couch might be a thing that is impossible for me to do. But if I ask an able-bodied person who's in my office to do a thing that will make a really big difference for my life, I have a ton of gratitude for having that need met. And having the opportunity to help another person leaves that person feeling good. And so I think that like, it's really important for us as humans to really recognize just how much we need each other and how okay it is that we need each other. There's no part of me that enjoys the fact that there are things that I physically can't do anymore. I would be lying if I said anything else. But I feel like it is an extraordinary privilege to be able to challenge myself to ask for help, which I really, really, really very rarely do, but I'm much better at it than I used to be. And I've been asking for more help and like nothing bad has happened. In fact, I've had my needs met. Holy moly. Like, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, the people who are around us, who love and care for us, and this applies to anyone, want to help. And then especially, you know, with having a disability, I'm sure people are a little bit awkward about it and like don't really know. And so the fact that you're able to communicate what you need and ask for help feels good, like you said, for everyone involved.
Yep. And I don't think this is exclusively for disabled people. Like, I actually think humans like to help humans. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously varying degrees of when someone is available to help, how someone is available to help. But human interaction is like really, really integral for survival on this planet. Mm-hmm. No person is an island. We are supposed to be interrelated and dependent upon one another in varying degrees. And I think anything that suggests otherwise is a lie.
I could not agree more. And this is a conversation, you know, the parallels here and just kind of speaking to the nature of human existence. Like, this is a conversation that I have because I consistently work with people who are like so independent, like you described in yourself, so independent, believe they can do it all, like would never have to ask for help if they didn't absolutely need it. Mm-hmm. And I've realized how much and become so grateful for how much strength it actually requires to, in this day and age, ask for help and consistently ask for what you need. Because it does feel, you know, we do live in a society that is a little bit like every person for themselves.
Right.
And we're only kind of going more in that direction. And so the more that we can count on each other and rely on each other, no matter what, whether you have a disability or not or whatever, you know, it's like, I think that is valuable, that human connection, like you're saying.
Amen. And honestly, and Whitney, this is something, and I think this lines up for you on social media as well. This has been one of the most beautiful take-home experiences for me on social media, because the number of people that respond to things that I post and say, like, I needed to hear this today. And I know that people have written that to you because I've seen it on your posts. Like, that's amazing. That is amazing. That's an amazing thing. And I just think that it is okay for us to need one another. And it's okay for us to embrace the idea that we do. And believe me when I say, a younger version of myself didn't know that, but a younger version of myself was wrong.
Yeah. So getting a little bit personal here, and tell me to F off if you don't want to answer it. But I'm curious how needing more assistance has impacted, I guess, to put a neutral verb on it, your relationship.
Well, first of all, my partner is wonderful, and he has been able to kind of really anticipate things being challenging before they've actually been challenging. Like, we go on vacation. My husband is from Ireland and his entire family still lives there. And so we went, well, this is a family story, but we went on this big cruise with 17 Irish people and Anna and one me. And my husband got a wheelchair for me. And this is way before I needed a chair. Like, he has just been super attentive. He's been super present. From a core belief place, I know that, like, I would do the same thing for my partner if the roles were reversed. I would do everything the same way. And I am pretty blown away by how adaptive and wonderful and accepting he has been, because my life looks really different right now. Like, I'm not in a place where I'm not cooking us dinner anymore. It sucks so much because I love cooking. It's like a great distress tolerance, but I just can't stand up. It's been amazing. I will tell you, like, I have a little bit of guilt, but I also have this feeling, this sense of like extraordinary responsibility to like keep doing my job and like do more and do better to kind of make up for the fact that I am less able in other areas of my life. And that is something I'm working on in like therapy, because like, I know that I'm valuable no matter what. And my partner has done nothing but demonstrate that, like, he can way roll with the punches so much better than I can. And it's almost annoying. There are times where I've say, like, I can't believe this is happening. And he will look at me as like, Anna, like, I knew this was going to happen. And I like kind of want to punch him in the face when he said that, because or when he says that, because I didn't know that this was going to happen. So his being like really grounded in the, like, I knew you had MS and I married him and I was not disabled and we will celebrate our 8th anniversary this summer. It's kind of amazing. But again, I'm really, really, really lucky because I have someone who is sticking around, and that is not universal at all. Like, my life is really different. I'm married to someone who is older than I am and who lived a life before we had a life together, which is a gift, because I think I'm 33. I think if I were married to someone who was 33 years old, I don't know that they would be able to adapt to the life that I now lead. I'm so bloody lucky for the person that I chose, that chose me.
I wish I could say I'm not in tears, but hello, that's really sweet.
But it affects everything, right? Like, there are times that, like, I have to have somebody help me put on my shoes. And like, that's not sexy. And there's nothing fun about the fact that, like, I need assistance doing things that, like, I don't want to have anybody help me do. Like, I carry more shame about things. And it's only because it's new. It's only because I haven't been in this space for very long. I think I will get better and be more gracious and more grateful as I get better at it. I don't know. My husband would probably say that, like, we have the exact same relationship that we've always had. I think that's bullshit. We do not. In a lot of ways, we have a better relationship than we had before. I'm very lucky.
Mm. Oh, I have all the feels. Is Instagram going to get to meet him?
I don't think so. I mean, he's on Instagram, but I don't know why I would introduce him, to be honest.
Yeah. Literally just like, because I'm nosy.
Yeah. No, but you can meet him, Whitney.
Yes. Okay. That's fine then. I guess to close us out, is there anything else that you came into this conversation today with the intention of talking about that I missed or?
No, I really think that I have done a kind of decent job on my Instagram talking about faux pas, about dealing with disability. And I'm sharing all of the things that I have learned as I learn them, because I have not always been a disabled person. And this is not a plea to get you to go to my Instagram page, but if you are interested in learning a little bit more about, like, being supportive of disabled folk, that I think has been a cool part of my use of social media. And I'm also going to ask for more inaccessible views. If you can tag me in your stories when you're in really beautiful places, and I would love videos, because videos are like moving videos, like of people moving and things. Like, it has been, I can't tell you the number of times I have started crying watching these videos. And I get a lot of messages from people saying, like, this is amazing. Thank you for putting this together. And again, like, this is not, I'm not begging for this, but if you have the ability to take pictures or take videos of places that a person who uses a walker or uses a wheelchair can't access, share them with me and tag me in your stories, because I will save them to the Inaccessible Views collection. It's actually really big and really, really beautiful. And it makes my heart very happy.
Yeah. Thank you for asking for that again, because I remembered that you were doing that and then I forgot. So I'm glad my mind started racing of like, oh, I'm going to share some stuff. So
yeah, no, that would be amazing and you live in LA. I'd love to see LA.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'll try to find some places that don't make me want to scream. There are really cute parts. There are some really cute parts. I'll get some good ones for you. I definitely will.
Perfect. Thanks, Whitney. Yeah. Maybe not the highway videos, because those feel really depressing. I feel like I've seen them on TV, and it's like the highway just doesn't move.
We don't even have to go there. But yes. Okay. So tag you and then hashtag inaccessible views, and you're saving those to your highlights on your Instagram. Yes. Anything else you want to leave us with today?
No, just thank you so much, Whitney, for letting me talk. I talked a lot.
I love it.
Thank you all for listening to me talk and for being here. I'm psyched.
Yeah, I'm excited. This is like 1,000 times better than our first interview. So I'm very excited about it.
Me too.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
If you are loving the Trust Your Body Project podcast and are ready to dive headfirst into your healing transformation, head on over to whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom to learn more about working with me. whitneycatalano.com/food-freedom.